Érettségi vizsga angol nyelvből. Hallott szövegértése középszint.
Welcome to the listening component of the Matura examination. The listening material and the instructions are recorded on this CD, and the tasks and instructions are printed in your test booklet. There will be three tasks, and every recording will be played twice. The tasks will begin with some music, and then you will hear, and you can also read, the instructions to the task. This will be followed by a silent period on the CD, in order to give you some time to look at the task in your test booklet before hearing the text. Then we will play the recording in one piece. After another short silent period, we will play the recording for the second time, but now in shorter sections and with breaks between the sections, in order to give you enough time to write down your answers. You will also have some time to check your work at the end of each task. Please note that the first item in each task, marked with a tick, is always an example. The whole test is about 30 minutes long. Good luck! Task 1. In this section, you are going to hear an interview with an American police officer about a type of crime that is becoming more and more widespread all over the world. Your task will be to circle the letter or letters of the correct answer or answers in the boxes on the right. Please note that in this task, both answers may be correct. However, there is always at least one correct answer. This means you might have to circle one or two letters. First, you will have some time to look at the task, and then we will play the whole recording in one piece. Then, you will hear the recording again. But this time, we will play the text in shorter sections to give you enough time to write down your answers. Now, look at the task in your booklet. Now, listen to the recording.
Oh, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a...
Welcome to the studio, Sergeant Miller.
Hello, everyone.
Well, we all know that throughout history, people have been the victims of pickpockets. In other words, criminals who steal money and other valuables from other people's pockets. But today, at least here in New York, pickpocketing is one of the most rapidly increasing crimes. Only in the past week, two acquaintances of mine have been robbed of their money and some important documents on the bus or the subway, and I have been the victim of pickpockets myself more than once. Is pickpocketing really such a common crime in the U.S. today?
Oh, yes. No one is immune to such incidents anywhere else in the country either, particularly in large cities, as you can well imagine. Pickpockets are increasing in number, and to make things worse, they are developing better methods to practice their skill. Approximately 1 million Americans lose money to pickpockets every year, so no one is really safe from a skilled pickpocket. His or her victims, or marks as they are called, can be rich or poor, young or old, well, just about anybody.
But who are they? Do the police know anything about these criminals?
Well, there are all sorts of people, of course, but police officials say the most efficient pickpockets come from South America, and more often than not, they are young people. Actually, kids, rather than adults. Many of these expert pickpockets are trained in a special school called Jingle Bell School. A pickpocket graduates from a GBS when he is able to steal a wallet from a dressed dummy that has bells inside its pockets.
What sort of punishment do pickpockets get if they are caught?
During the 18th century, pickpockets were hanged in England. Large crowds of people would gather to watch the hanging, which was supposed to be a warning to other pickpockets. However, in time the practice was discontinued, and today they just get away with a fine or a short term of imprisonment. If they ever get caught, that is, which, as a matter of fact, does not happen very often.
What are the most dangerous places in this respect for the ordinary citizen?
Some of the favored places of pickpockets are banks, airports, supermarkets, trains, and bus stations. Usually a pickpocket will work with another pickpocket as his or her partner.
Is there anything one can do to ward off pickpockets?
To avoid being the victim of a pickpocket, it is important to be very careful when in crowded places or in the midst of large gatherings of people. One should be very careful with backpacks, which are very practical and comfortable, but are also very easy to reach into unnoticed. It's much safer to keep money and other valuables in an inner pocket of your clothes. Another thing is that, if you find yourself being surrounded by several young people, you're probably in trouble, and it might be an idea to yell. If you remain polite in a situation like this, you are probably going to be robbed. Most important of all, however, never carry a lot of cash in your wallet, and keep your documents out of sight, hidden deep inside your pocket or your bag.
Thank you very much, Sergeant Miller.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
Now, listen to the recording again. Remember that this time we will play the recording in shorter sections.
Oh, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a...
Welcome to the studio, Sergeant Miller.
Hello, everyone.
Well, we all know that throughout history, people have been the victims of pickpockets. In other words, criminals who steal money and other valuables from other people's pockets. But today, at least here in New York, pickpocketing is one of the most rapidly increasing crimes. Only in the past week, two acquaintances of mine have been robbed of their money and some important documents on the bus or the subway, and I have been the victim of pickpockets myself more than once. Is pickpocketing really such a common crime in the U.S. today?
Oh, yes. No one is immune to such incidents anywhere else in the country either, particularly in large cities, as you can well imagine. Pickpockets are increasing in number, and to make things worse, they are developing better methods to practice their skill. Approximately 1 million Americans lose money to pickpockets every year, so no one is really safe from a skilled pickpocket. His or her victims, or marks as they are called, can be rich or poor, young or old, well, just about anybody.
But But who are they? Do the police know anything about these criminals?
Well, there are all sorts of people, of course, but police officials say the most efficient pickpockets come from South America. And more often than not, they are young people. Actually, kids, rather than adults. Many of these expert pickpockets are trained in a special school called Jingle Bell School. A pickpocket graduates from a GBS when he is able to steal a wallet from a dressed dummy that has bells inside its pockets.
What sort of punishment do pickpockets get if they are caught?
During the 18th century, pickpockets were hanged in England. Large crowds of people would gather to watch the hanging, which was supposed to be a warning to other pickpockets. However, in time the practice was discontinued, and today they just get away with a fine or a short term of imprisonment. If they ever get caught, that is. Which, as a matter of fact, does not happen very often.
What are the most dangerous places in this respect for the ordinary citizen?
Some of the favored places of pickpockets are banks, airports, supermarkets, trains, and bus stations. Usually a pickpocket will work with another pickpocket as his or her partner.
Is there anything one can do to ward off pickpockets?
To avoid being the victim of a pickpocket, it is important to be very careful when in crowded places or in the midst of large gatherings of people. One should be very careful with backpacks, which are very practical and comfortable, but are also very easy to reach into unnoticed. It's much safer to keep money and other valuables in an inner pocket of your clothes. Another thing is that, if you find yourself being surrounded by several young people, you're probably in trouble, and it might be an idea to yell. If you remain polite in a situation like this, you are probably going to be robbed. Most important of all, however, never carry a lot of cash in your wallet, and keep your documents out of sight, hidden deep inside your pocket or your bag.
Thank you very much, Sergeant Miller.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
That is the end of Task 1. Task 2. In this part of the test, you will hear a news report about a man who wanted to cut the cost of flying. Your task will be to find one incorrect word or number in each of the following sentences, cross it out, and write the correct one on the line after the sentence. First, you will have some time to look at the task, and then we will play the whole recording in one piece. Then, you will hear the recording again, but this time we will play the text in shorter sections to give you enough time to write down your answers. Now, look at the task in your booklet. Now, listen to the recording.
I don't know when I'll be back again. Leaving on a jet plane. I don't know when I'll be back again.
A man shipped himself from Chicago to his parents' home in Dallas in an airline cargo crate because he thought it was the cheapest way to fly.
McKinley, 25, a construction worker from Chicago, said he made the trip because he was homesick and a friend thought he could save money by flying as cargo. In fact, he could have flown first class for a lower price.
McKinley, who had no food or water on the 15-hour journey, said, "I'm sitting there thinking, oh God, I don't know why I'm doing this. I'm sitting there thinking, like, any minute somebody will notice that there's somebody sitting inside this crate." Nobody did.
Before setting out, McKinley filled out shipping instructions saying the crate held a computer and clothes. The box was loaded onto a pressurized heated cargo plane and was flown from O'Hare Airport, Chicago, to New York, then on to Dallas.
Billy Ray Thomas, who delivered the crate to McKinley's parents' home, spotted a pair of eyes peering out and thought there was a body inside. McKinley broke the box open and crawled out, startling both his parents and the delivery man, who immediately called the police.
McKinley was arrested and jailed on unrelated charges 3 days after his overnight trip. Federal officials are now considering additional charges of stowing away on a plane. District Attorney Bill Hill said he violated the law of stupidity, if nothing else.
On a jet plane, I don't know when I'll be back again. Leaving on a jet plane, I don't know when I'll be back again. Oh, babe.
Now, listen to the recording again. Remember that this time we will play the recording in shorter sections.
On a jet plane, I don't know when I'll be back again. Leaving on a jet plane, I don't know when I'll be back again.
A man shipped himself from Chicago to his parents' home in Dallas in an airline cargo crate because he thought it was the cheapest way to fly.
McKinley, 25, a construction worker from Chicago, said he made the trip because he was homesick and a friend thought he could save money by flying as cargo. In fact, he could have flown first class for a lower price.
McKinley, who had no food or water on the 15-hour journey, said, "I'm sitting there thinking, oh God, I don't know why I'm doing this. I'm sitting there thinking, like, any minute somebody will notice that there's somebody sitting inside this crate." Nobody did.
Before setting out, McKinley filled out shipping instructions saying the crate held a computer and clothes. The box was loaded onto a pressurized heated cargo plane and was flown from O'Hare Airport, Chicago, to New York, then on to Dallas.
Billy Ray Thomas, who delivered the crate to McKinley's parents' home, spotted a pair of eyes peering out and thought there was a body inside. McKinley broke the box open and crawled out, startling both his parents and the delivery man, who immediately called the police.
McKinley was arrested and jailed on unrelated charges 3 days after his overnight trip. Federal officials are now considering additional charges of stowing away on a plane. District Attorney Bill Hill said he violated the law of stupidity, if nothing else. On a jet plane, I don't know when I'll be back again. Leaving on a jet plane, I don't know when I'll be back again.
That is the end of Task 2. Task 3. In this section, you will hear a story about an outstanding British sportsman, Peter Keenan. Your task will be to decide whether the following statements are true, false, or we do not know because the text does not say, and write the appropriate letter in the boxes on the right. Write A if the statement is true. Write B if the statement is false. And write C if the text does not say. First, you will have some time to look at the task, and then we will play the whole recording in one piece. Then, you will hear the recording again, but this time we will play the text in shorter sections to give you enough time to write down your answers. A means true, B means false, C means the text does not say. Now, look at the task in your booklet. Now, listen to the recording.
In the clearing stands a boxer and a fighter by his trade, and he carries the reminders of every glove that laid him down or cut him till he cried out in his anger and his shame.
It is beyond argument that some human beings are better able than others to react positively in the face of pressure or danger. Many of the heroes of sport, though by no means all of them, come into that category. We all have our own vividly remembered examples of such heroes. One of mine is of Peter Keenan, when he was at the end of a great career as a heavyweight fighter. He had come at last to the point where his extraordinary skill and unyielding heart would not be enough to protect him against the youth and vigour of the new man, Freddie Gilroy of Belfast. Flying with Keenan to Northern Ireland for the toughest night of his professional life, some of us reasoned with him that, since the result of the fight was almost certain to be against him, he should make it easy for himself and ensure that his courage did not force him to suffer unnecessarily. Keenan was realistic enough to accept the hopelessness of his fight. But, he said, I am the champion. And when you're the champion, you don't give a title away. They have to come and take it. If Gilroy wants mine, he'll have to fight for it until I've got nothing left. Absolutely nothing. That's how it was. Keenan was knocked down again and again, but he kept climbing to his feet. Some would say that what he did was pointless. All I can say is that I'm proud even to have sat alongside such a man on an aeroplane.
Now, listen to the recording again. Remember that this time we will play the recording in shorter sections.
In the clearing stands a boxer and a fighter by his trade, and he carries the reminders of every glove that laid him down or cut him till he cried out. In his anger and his shame.
It is beyond argument that some human beings are better able than others to react positively in the face of pressure or danger. Many of the heroes of sport, though by no means all of them, come into that category. We all have our own vividly remembered examples of such heroes. One of mine is of Peter Keenan, when he was at the end of a great career as a heavyweight fighter. He had come at last to the point where his extraordinary skill and unyielding heart would not be enough to protect him against the youth and vigour of the new man, Freddie Gilroy of Belfast. Flying with Keenan to Northern Ireland for the toughest night of his professional life, some of us reasoned with him that, since the result of the fight was almost certain to be against him, he should make it easy for himself and ensure that his courage did not force him to suffer unnecessarily. Keenan was realistic enough to accept the hopelessness of his fight. But, he said, I am the champion. And when you're the champion, you don't give a title away. They have to come and take it. If Gilroy wants mine, he'll have to fight for it until I've got nothing left. Absolutely nothing. That's how it was. Keenan was knocked down again and again, but he kept climbing to his feet. Some would say that what he did was pointless. All I can say is that I'm proud even to have sat alongside such a man on an aeroplane.
That is the end of task 3, and also the end of the listening exam.